Welcome back. 37 minutes after the hour, I'm Michelangelo Cigarelli. 866-305-6887 is our number, toll free. And last hour of the show, a woman did use that number and call us, who was a religious conservative who also wanted to bomb, drop bombs on Iran, Iraq, North Korea. The fervor, the passion, and the feeling that they could do whatever they want in the name of religion, it does seem like an addiction, or certainly like the way that people who are addicted to substances sometimes operate. Robert N. Miner is someone who actually looks at religion as an addiction. He's a writer, lecturer, professor of religious studies at the University of Kansas, and author of a new book called When Religion Is an Addiction, and joins us to talk about it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. Good to be with you.
You really come out swinging in this book. In your second paragraph, you call the religious right the family drunk. What do you mean by this? And is the rest of society, or at least the Republican Party, the enablers?
what I mean, of course, is that the function of religion that's working in the lives of these extreme right-wing people is fulfilling the same function as alcohol would for the family drunk. And so what that means also is the family drunk in the family becomes the center of attention in society, or in a family, and the rest of the family begins to justify, work around, respond to, cover up for, have to be nice to this family drunk. And that the right wing has taken that position in our society.
When you say that religion has the same function as alcohol does for an alcoholic, or I assume, cocaine does for a coke addict or somebody who's addicted to drugs, are you saying just the psychological, sort of rationalization that is used to do irrational things in the name of, that particular addiction? Or are there real, are you talking about real similarities in the chemical experience in the brain, the euphoria that people experience, and, of course, the endorphin rush or other drugs, other, chemicals in their brain that may give them confidence?
Well, now remember, of course, I'm talking about when religion is an addiction. So I'm not saying all religion functions this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first thing I want to say. And but
are social drinkers, social religion.
and there are people who aren't caught up in addiction. They're able to walk away and say, I don't like this. Or they're able to become a Martin Luther King Jr. Or they're able to, look at more liberal religion than that. And the people who can't, because of course they've bet their life on this high. And what I'm saying is this, what I call the high of righteousness. I quote John Bradshaw, the addiction specialist, who says from his experience as both a Catholic brother and a cocaine addict that the high of righteousness, he says, is the same as the high of cocaine. And what I'm saying is, yes, I think this is a process addiction for many people. Therefore, it does produce some of the same need in the brain, the dopamine and so on, for this a continual high. And since a high is something that that I'm righteous, I have to be righteous, I have to be right, I have to be righteous. And since a high is something that doesn't last, you always need a higher fix, another fix, and that fix usually has to be even stronger, and that's why they moved into politics.
Do all religious people have the ability to become addicts? I mean, can it happen to anyone who is religious? Or are there some people, like with alcohol, where if they have, a drink every, few days, it's fine. And then other people where no matter what, they are going to become the people who are addicted.
I think it is more like alcohol. I mean, obviously, I like a good margarita every so often. I even like a bad margarita every so often. But the question is then, what do I do with that? What and why am I drinking? If the reason I'm drinking is to not deal with my issues, the psychological issues, and therefore the drink provides me with a sort of a solution, which is not a solution. It's just sort of coping with my life. And instead of changing my life and so on, I use this, in this case, religion. Then I'm in an addictive pattern, and that's the thing that begins to spiral downward. So I think the similarity is very much the same, that people can use religion the way someone can use alcohol without saying that a glass of wine is bad or something for you.
Right. Yeah. And that's the key, how one uses it in their life. You write about John Bradshaw, expert on addiction, recovery, codependency. And you alluded to this too but elaborate a bit, comparing the high from being righteous to the high of cocaine.
It involves what the high of righteousness, this sense that I'm righteous, this feeling that I'm right, other people are wrong, I'm on the right path, I've found the solution, and that feeling is the cover-up feeling for exactly what extreme right-wing religion tells people they are. You know, one of the key ideas of right-wing religion is people are basically rotten, and that they deserve eternal child abuse from a heavenly father who is just the model of love for the universe. And just imagine that, saying that the model of love for the universe says that you deserve eternal child abuse. That's sort of the lowest of low self-concepts. And that's what is pushed by conservative religion, and particularly by the right wing, and then saying there's nothing you can do to that will ever be good. And so the first thing it's covering up, of course, is this sense that once you buy into right wing religion, you have this born again experience. You've accepted the idea that you're basically rotten, and there are versions of that in other traditions. In Catholicism, it's original sin. But this goes way back to Augustine and earlier. And so one of the key issues in addiction that addiction specialists find is that they find that one of the common addictive pieces is that it's covering what they call a low self-concept. Well, in this case, religion is saying your low self-concept isn't a misunderstanding of you. It's really true. It's like saying, you know, you're not schizophrenic, you're not paranoid. They're really all out to get you, you know. And so this is a major negative thing.
So,
I think it fits with how child rearing goes in our country.
You know, the implications of what you're saying, usually controversial, obviously, on a number of levels, but also because many people, to deal with their addiction to alcohol or deal with their addiction to cocaine or some other substance, go through recovery programs that are religion-based and replace their addiction. I guess you would say replace their addiction to the substance with their addiction to religion.
Right, and that's what we call co-addiction. And I have a suspicion that the current occupant
The White House
is a good example of co-addiction. I mean, he moved from one addiction to another. He never went through sort of even any kind of recovery program. He would say, I'm not an addict anymore. And instead of getting into some sort of program, whatever that should be, I don't want to endorse sort of one or the other, he has just moved into another addiction. And his sort of followers, the ones that are sort of like this 20-some percent that you think, why do they keep doing this, are saying, but he's a good Christian man. And their addiction says, look, I'm not gonna confront my pusher, my dealer. This is where I get the righteous high. I can't believe that my dealers are bad in any way. Otherwise, I lose my righteous high. And so it does have so many parallels there.
Hmm. My guest is Robert N. Miner, Bob Miner, Dr. Bob, I guess, Miner. The book is When Religion is an Addiction. I'm Michelangelo Cidirelli on Sirius HowQ 109. You write about, obviously, religion as addiction, and then, of course, there are various fixes for that addiction, and that marriage, gay marriage, is their current fix for that righteous high. Talk about that.
Well, as I say in the book, again, controversially, is that these victories at the polls are sort of like the alcoholics' New Year's Eve. That is, when you win these victories, you that reinforces the sense that you're righteous. Now, it's sad that someone needs that to reinforce their sense of righteousness. So, as I say in the book, this indicates really a lack of belief, you know, that I need reinforcement from government for my faith. But what it does then is once you've done that, and that provides this high, you can't stop. You've got to go on to, you know, the Defense of Marriage Act. That's not enough. That was a high, but a fix doesn't last. So you've got to go on to some deeper cause. And so this sort of drives them, because right now the means of getting the fix that the right wing's moved to, I believe, is to political victories like this. So you need one after another after another. You know, the war on Christmas, the war on Christians, the same-sex marriage, same-sex adoption, same-sex this. It sort of can't stop. And you see the pushers of this are continuing to push it.
Now, you have some advice for those of us who, of course, would be the people who have to, I guess, get in, you know, I don't know, get involved in an intervention or you know, take
at
care.
At least not enable it.
Do yeah. You say, for instance, even when rejecting some of these beliefs, these fixes, these fixes for the moral high, don't put the term so-called before it. Like, don't say so-called partial birth abortion. You know, and I'm wondering why the reason, what the reason is for that.
Well, the language of addictive religion is a language of mystification. That's what they call it, an addiction. In other words, it's meant to stop the argument. And so when you use that kind of phraseology, you're repeating this. There's a linguist, I know you know, George Lakoff.
Yes, who we've had on the show many times.
Right, and he's talking the same thing. And you as you repeat this language, you're talking in the worldview, or he would call frame, of the addict.
So you're reinforcing that it exists, but that you don't believe in it, and that makes them even more sort of adamant in their belief.
That's right. It's like when Richard Nixon said, "I am not a crook." We were all convinced.
Well, on this program, for example, we talk a lot about these conversion therapy movements, these reparative therapy movements, these, and this is how I always say it, so-called ex-gay movements. I mean, I don't want to give credibility to it by saying ex-gay, but what should I call it then? Because, of course, you talk about, as Lakoff does, don't say gay marriage, say marriage equality. You know, what do you say, what do you replace the term ex-gay with if you don't say so-called ex-gay?
Well, I you could do that, but I would probably talk in terms of, and I know this is a longer phrase, people who've gone through I'm forgetting what the word is, a rejected process by professional groups, something like that. In other words, I would use a longer phrase and always talk about it in terms of the ex-gay thing. I would always talk about it in terms of the fact that it's been rejected by mainstream psychological organizations. And I would use that every time I use the phrase, just as I wouldn't talk about partial birth abortion, I would say a procedure that's seldom used in lay terms for women or something like that. In other words, that's what needs to be repeated if we're going to make long-term change.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are on recovery programs, 12-step programs, because we've talked about certainly people replacing their addiction to a substance with an addiction to religion. And, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, 7 of the 12 steps mention God or a higher power. Is that why it works? Are they simply replacing it with another addiction? And, you know, that in itself would be quite controversial.
That is. And I'm not saying that's the case. I mean, when it comes down to applying this, this is why I wrote that last chapter, Toward Intervention. You have to begin to sort of analyze who you have in front of you. So that in some cases it may be that what's being substituted is a new sort of process addiction. But in other cases it may be working for people. So I can't make a judgment about it individually. And I know, I even mentioned in the book, there's a thing called rational recovery, an RR programs, which don't have that element. But I think, and I also think that there are many great insights that AA and Al-Anon and NA and Old Readers Anonymous bring to understanding how addictive thinking works and how people think as addicts and so on. And I do use a lot of those, though I say in the introduction I don't endorse any of these or don't necessarily claim to speak for them. I do use a lot of their insights. For example, you know, they use that old serenity prayer that's credited to Reinhold Niebuhr. God grant me the serenity to know what I can change, what I can't change, and the wisdom to know the difference. And that, which I've shortened, and that's a good point. That we need to be able to look at people and say, this is a person who is addicted to religion. I can't change them. And so Al-Anon says, well, the three C's of Al-Anon are, you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. So all I can do is make the world, make my life, and live my life safer for me.
We have about 30 seconds, but I wanted to ask you, the book is When Religion is an Addiction. Who is the book for? Is it for the addicted? Because they're not going to... Or is it for all those people who are trying to, well, I guess, engage in an intervention and help them through?
It's really for people who would consider themselves liberal, who I would consider now, by the actions they're doing, are enabling. And in many ways, I gave you many examples, the Democratic Party does that in what they do rather than confronting. And they're afraid because you can't, as Lakoff would say, you cannot speak about your values. You cannot value something. You cannot get control of your own destiny unless you're willing to lose for your values. If you can't lose for your values, you're not going to convince the middle. And this is really saying there is this right-wing group. How can we meet? How can we change the movable middle? And we're not going to be if we're arguing with addicts.
It's so important. You're absolutely right. It's for all of us who have to have an understanding of this if we want to change things. Thanks so much for coming on today. Really appreciate
Welcome, Mike.
It.
Thanks for having me.
Robert N. Miner is the author of When Religion is an Addiction. Very interesting. 6 minutes before the end.
The Michelangelo Senior Ellie Show.